From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.
Welcome to Postcard from Poprad, boys and girls. The sun has got his hat on. Hip, 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 hooray. I forgot the rest of it. I'm Eric Wiltshire in the glorious Tatras region of Slovakia, which is out in the east in a small town called Poprad, where it's wonderful, marvellous, and life is good. Unlike Great Britain, or as they call it here, Velky Britannia, because that's where Mr. Banks is on the zit of the nose of Europe.
Thank you very much. I'm actually, you know, you said the sun's got his hat on.
Yes.
Well, I've got my hat on, and my coat, and my one-bar electric fire, which is costing me as much as a car to operate. It's still freezing in Britain. 4, 5, 6 months of winter we've had here.
Oh, dear.
It's terrible.
Oh, dear. But anyway, in Gay Paris, where it's full of doggy doo-doo and stuff like that, it is none other than Mark Gander.
Well, hello, yeah. It is full of doggy doo-doo, but I have to say the sun has got his hat off.
Good!
It's bright sunshine, uh-huh. And the doggy doo-doo is gradually being dried out to a wonderful crisp as we speak, so that's great. Yes, welcome to Paris.
Coming up today's show, we have... In fact, we're going to be doing a little bit of help with the Prince's Trust, which is Prince Charles, of course, and a big thing for young people to get involved in towards the end of the show with our reporter, Danny Palmer, who's going to be joining us.
Good old Danny.
We got some sad news, as always, at the beginning of the show. I don't know why we keep doing that. We'll be discussing a couple of bits about Libya. Slightly different, maybe, to the way that you would have expected, but that's us. We'll be advising you of some problems with a huge hit on websites this morning, which has been absolutely terrible on Friday. We'll be talking about the B Sky B takeover, Iran, some Olympic stuff, the Slovak stunners that are going to really rock it in Eurovision. Really, I said that, Eurovision. The bits in London, Apple's new iPad, and various other bits and pieces that you probably won't have seen in the news because they're too boring to do it. Starting off with our film critique and another obituary, it's the lovely Jane Russell.
Yes, she was absolutely lovely, I have to say, yes. What a shame.
Lee?
Well, she was, wasn't she? She was very nice. Very
well,
nice
Lee, indeed. You were supposed to come and tell me what all the films were.
She appeared in The Outlaw. Gentlemen prefer... No, that wasn't her. I don't know what she appeared in.
But she was a bit of a Hollywood stunner, wasn't she?
Well, she was. She was a gorgeous man. She's the one who actually was the precursor of Madonna's pointy bra. And that bra for her was invented by Howard Hughes in 1940 when she was about to appear in The Outlaw because he didn't feel that her cleavage was impressive enough. So he made her a conical bra.
Really? What's the connection between that and planes, then?
Planes?
Yes.
Well, he used to own planes, didn't he? He
used to fly a lot of them. An airplane, was it a seaplane he was one of the inventors of as well, wasn't
he? He invented the seaplane, he invented all sorts. He was a magical, wonderful, eccentric man. Yeah.
Have we actually watched any of her films?
I've seen her films. I suspect Mark actually watched them when they first came out.
And, Ouch!
Yes, I've watched some of the films, but I have to say, Jane, you can always rustle next to me.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I know. She's the lady that had legs all the way up to her. Anyway, before I forget, say hi to the guys out in Talk Radio, X Replay Radio, on Audioboo and RTI across the streams as well. Which brings us nicely into...
Can I just interrupt for a second?
Well, you normally do.
There's one more. Another death, which actually is worth note. Is Frank Woodruff Buckles, who was the last living American veteran of World War One, and he died a couple of weeks ago at the incredible age of 110, and it was natural causes.
Wow.
And one last one, because
I
don't see why ordinary people shouldn't get a mention on this, like Jane Russell had biffers. These blokes don't have biffers, but they deserve a mention, and that's Milton Levine, who's died at the age of 97. No, gentlemen, who knows what Milton Levine invented?
The stuff that you clean things in for babies.
No, the ant farm.
The ant farm?
The ant farm.
The ant farm. He co-invented the ant farm with another bloke. And he's gone down in the annals. The
annals.
Annals.
Yeah, animals of history. He's got it down in the animals of history.
Don't you start. I was watching, I can't remember what DVD it was on. There was an old DVD program where they were talking about the now not planet of Uranus in the old speak, and they were calling it something to do with your bottom.
I know, that's right. That's right.
Unbelievable.
Funny thing is, in Manchester, there was a news agency called Mercury Press, and there was another called Star. And I, for a joke, named mine Up Your Anus News. And it was so funny when you'd actually get all the news desk saying, do you want to speak to my your anus?
Stop it. I didn't. Let's move on to some serious stuff for a second. There's something very interesting going on as a broadcast viewer, I suppose, or in our terms, a bit of a critique or grumpy old men, in Libya. And something that Mark put up, Mark mentioned this morning in the office, so I'm going to let him do this bit. And it frightens me, and every time I see this, the hairs on the back of my neck stand up and go, ow.
Yes, well, I've brought it up with the BBC, actually, and I've been following some of the reports in Libya, and there's a Canadian lady who's a very, very well-established journalist and very high quality, very serious, called Lise Doucette. And I was just a bit surprised this morning to see a recording of her interviewing really some boys, who were in fact rebels, or planning to be rebels and to take up arms against Gaddafi. And she asked one of them what his name was. And she said, he said, well, I'm 15 years old. There's my cousin, 17 years old.
Right.
And she turned to the 15-year-old and she said, well, you know, what you're doing is very dangerous, isn't it? And he said, yes, but it is. But we have to kill Gaddafi, and I'm going to kill Gaddafi.
Right.
And, that, you know, fine, very interesting and so forth. And then I was amazed that she said, well, what's your name? And, of course, the poor lad then simply, you know, just gave his name in full, and which then was perceived to be broadcast over the BBC. And I think it was very irresponsible, really, that a journalist of that calibre...
Hang on a second. Yeah, he's saying it's irresponsible to name the bloke.
Yes.
Yes, I think...
Absolutely.
I think it is irresponsible.
Okay.
And I'll tell you,
irresponsible then to use his photograph and use a live moving picture of him? No, you think people would just recognise him anyway?
No.
I think there are difficulties, but I think when you specifically name him, and he could have family in Tripoli and so forth. And of course, we are talking about here a minor, if you like, 15 years of age. And I don't know what the rules are, for instance, in the United Kingdom or in Canada. I would have thought normally you'd have to ask parental permission. And I've seen lots of journalists, for instance, when they're interviewing people in Egypt, will say, well, I'm not going to ask your name because that's probably too dangerous.
Tell you what, Mark, that's the professional standard. In broadcasting,
I think that would be a professional standard.
That is the professional standard.
Yeah. And I mean, it doesn't look to me as if the rebels are going to fail. But I have to say that if they did fail, if, you know, there was some score settling that went on later on, then it could be the fact that that boy really just uttered his name because he's too naive to do anything else, which eventually gets him into a lot of trouble.
I think that's one of the most heinous and facile and empty attacks on journalists I've ever heard.
No, absolutely not.
It's not an attack on journalists, but it is a criticism of the way that it was edited, because I think the BBC should have pulled that part.
Yes, I agree.
I'm sorry, Lee.
It might be a standard with print journalism that they do one thing, but I can assure you...
It's not a standard. In
broadcast journalism, right from when I first started back in the very late 80s, if I got a letter from the then Czechoslovakia, it was an unwritten rule. You did not put the name of the person up on the screen, on the text service that I edited, because it was dangerous and it could harm them. Because, number one, they weren't supposed to be watching these channels. Number two, when I was working with the old BBC engineering on their international commercial station, we would get letters from, and I'm talking mid-90s now, we would get from Tunisia, from Libya and various other countries in the north of Africa, letters from people, and they would say, please do not put our name out, call me Alan, call me Lee, call me Mark, because if you do, I'm going to be in trouble and my family could be in trouble.
And I accept that.
We all did it as norm.
Yeah, but that's it. But that's fine. Those people had asked you
not
to use their name.
This is just a boy of 15
years
age.
He's 15
years
old.
This is a boy of 15 years of age who is armed and threatening to kill a despot of a world leader. And we're supposed to protect his identity. What a load of hideous rubbish.
What do you think we should do? We should have him arrested then for intention to commit grievous bodily harm.
These are not normal circumstances in Libya or the world.
I'm just being pro-Gaddafi. Well, of course,
I think
the boy's identity needed to be protected. He's clearly a minor. She asked him what his age was. He said,
"This 15. Boy."
She then said, "What a dangerous thing you're doing! Can you please tell the nice men over in the west of Libya your full name?" And he gave it.
Well, if that was stupid enough to do it, that boy is in a cauldron of hell, and he's doing what he believes is right, and probably took quite a great deal of pride in offering his name. If he'd have asked her not to name him, or to keep his face off the screen, that's a totally different story.
Well, I can say, as the other side of the coin, as a norm, in the old standards, the professional standards, you would not name somebody. You would ask first if it was okay to name them, and
maybe she'd done that.
I very much doubt it.
And if they're 15 years of age in that kind of situation, then actually I think that you'd have to ask their parents to sign waivers.
In my opinion...
Maybe not in Libya, in a war situation.
No, you wouldn't.
The whole of the society. Journalists are going to go around knocking on people's doors in the middle of all the hell that's going on there, asking, do you mind if we name your son?
Exactly. I mean, the other thing is, of course, this boy's name is totally irrelevant to the reporting and the point that she was made. She didn't even afterwards address him by his name.
So what was the purpose? Mark, stop.
Sort of left hanging.
Stop. Just a minute. Let's ask the question. What is the benefit to actually gaining his name?
Right. Would you like me to answer?
Yes.
Very simply, there is one simple law in journalism, and that covers the broadcast media just as much. That the thing you have to do is identify people who are in news stories. You have to identify them by their name, by their age, by their address, and by the job, whatever else makes them stay as themselves, and they can't be mixed up with
somebody
else.
He was on the television. His face was there.
His face was exactly, that's what I'm saying, so why can't you name him?
So what we're saying really is actually that she didn't do a professional job because she didn't also get his name and address, telephone number, and to tell Gaddafi where he'd be tomorrow night waiting for a bit of retribution.
I just think it's ridiculous to say that. I can't see how you can possibly say that.
I'll tell you what, boys and girls, we're going to go round in circles. We'll have to agree to disagree.
I put in a quick complaint to the Beeb. Obviously, I'm not a professional, but I'll let you know what the response was.
It really will be interesting.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. If you've had problems on the internet today, Friday, then that's probably due to a DDoS attack, which has been running around the internet. DDoS means distributed denial of service, which basically means you try to log on to a certain website and it just doesn't work. It normally says reset or something like that on your browser. And apparently 29 government websites were attacked, but the one that's probably most prevalent, and if you had problems, I can tell you it was them as well, WordPress.com, which is probably one of the biggest of the two, or second to the two. There's Blogger and WordPress are the big ones, really, in the blogging community. Not only that, people like CNN use them as well. And recently, Microsoft did a deal with them, which saw everybody that was on Windows Live being migrated over to WordPress. So that meant that my blog didn't work as well. One of my blogs didn't work this morning either. I can also tell you, if you've been having problems, just persevere a little bit, because they have been getting it back online, but it's very slow. So you might have a few problems, you might not. But it's not WordPress that's the problem. It was an attack which was notified to everybody from South Korea, believe it or not, who are quite up on all this sort of thing. And there was definitely some serious attacks on the US websites, which is one of the reasons why WordPress suffered quite badly. WordPress wouldn't actually say what the problem was, although there's quite a lot of belief around that it had something to do with a non-US blog that was on WordPress, and I hope it wasn't, because I'd like to kick them if it was down to that.
What's a non-US blog?
It means it wasn't in America. It could have been one of
US sites.
Oh my word!
A journalist's mind is literal.
Well, that's very, very true. Staying with journalism, this is going to be another bun fight for sure. Oh. I know it is. Mark's friend of mine, Mr. Murdoch, currently, News Corp are trying to take over BSkyB in the UK, which will cost them billions of pounds to do. And obviously, the boring print people have got the screamed foul to the government and said, and you've now got like several newspapers which have got very differing political stances now getting together and going, we don't like that Mr. Murdoch fellow, he can't do any of that. And so what's going to happen if the deal goes through is Sky News, which is one of the better news services, it has to be said, will be spun off into a new company which News Corp will not control. My question really is, if Sky News weren't running Sky News, who the hell else could do it in England?
I have nothing to say on this subject. I will only incriminate myself and everybody alike.
All I know is apparently they're loss-making.
Allegedly, it's something like 30 million a year it loses.
Yeah, that's right.
And has done... although the loss is...
It's been 9 years, hasn't it?
Well, no. I suppose in relative terms, it's gone down in reality, because it was hemorrhaging like mad at the beginning because nobody wants to advertise on it. It's very difficult to advertise on news channels, that's for sure. But the fact is, it's been a flagship, a bit like Sky Arts to the BSkyB package. And Sky News is undoubtedly good,
why would we be bothered about Rupert Murdoch?
Well, I don't know.
I think it's a good thing. I think what Rupert Murdoch is doing is absolutely spiffing and fine.
Well, the argument is insufficient plurality if he has Sky News as well.
Yeah, but that again is a heinous middle class oiky argument against the workings of the media.
Really,
it's just not true. Well, yeah, how much media do you want? He will.
Well,
own.
You know, if you take the non Murdoch print media. You're going to have to help me out, Lee, because I'm not very good at this. You've got the Mirror is one of them.
Mirror's not.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's not Murdoch. The Telegraph.
Yep.
Independent.
Yep.
Guardian.
Yep.
If I'm right, all four of those have joined forces and said, this won't be fair if Mr. Murdoch has that as well.
That's right. But that's just posturing, isn't it? That's just taking on. I can't see what's frightening about this, really, because Rupert Murdoch's owned most of, or a good chunk of Sky News anyway.
Well, 39%.
Yeah, it's an exceptionally good news program. I think it does take on the BBC in a lot of ways, because it's a little bit more tabloid than the BBC, and I quite like tabloid, obviously, and. Rupert Murdoch owns, two of three in Britain of the most successful newspapers we have.
Uh-huh.
Two, anyway. Uh-huh. And so what you have with Rupert Murdoch is somebody who believes implicitly in commercialism,
right.
Who actually makes money, has made himself one of the richest men in the world, and as a newspaper baron, doesn't really interfere to any great extent on the content of his newspapers and news programmes.
And I have to clarify that, because you speak as one who used to work for him.
Yeah, it's a simple fact. Everybody gets paranoid about newspaper barons.
Mm.
The thing is, look at it sensibly. Rupert Murdoch owns, I can't remember, is it 12 newspapers he owns?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, whatever he owns a series of newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he does not have any day-to-day control over the editorial content of those newspapers. He might design the political, or be involved in designing the political background to it, and certainly takes on editors who will represent what he wants his newspapers to do. This isn't really frightening.
No. In fact, I'll add to that, because I think you watch Sky News, don't you, Mark?
No, I don't. No, I don't have a Sky access. I watch Freesat channels.
Well, Sky News is free.
I don't think it's on Freesat.
Oh, is it not? No. Anyway, when because we get it on the other Astra satellite, but the fact is that when you get the what the papers say malarkey on there, you do get journalists from The Mirror, The Guardian, The Independent, The Telegraph. So all those newspapers are getting free adverts at the moment on Sky News. So what the heck are they whinging about?
Well, exactly, but it's not a free advert.
Of course it is.
A free advert. It isn't a free advert, Eric.
Well, what is it then?
It's the basics of freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. That newspapers who represent the news, it goes back decades and decades since the media actually started to be able to broadcast in some way or other. They're there to explain their differing points of view of the news and mm-hmm. to analyse what the news is. Now, I'm afraid if it was a medical thing, mm-hmm. you would ask doctors from different practices or different hospitals to come on and discuss it. Yeah. That's all that's happening with
But doctors aren't selling newspapers.
Didn't I read recently that this free advertisements for newspapers business is going to finish anyway? I'm that came up in the news.
You can't do it. People talk about things like this all the time. And
well, okay, why does it? Let's just pretend for a minute that you're a guest now on Sky News or any other news channel. Yeah. And when you go on the news, it's really simple. You can be the talking head, Lee Banks.
Yes.
But you cannot be Lee Banks of the Banks Gazette. You're just Lee Banks.
There again you have exactly the problem that these sort of things undermine. This again is a middle class prissy argument against what the basic tenets of newspapers are about. I would, as Lee Banks, if I went on Sky News, I would have no authority and no clout and no background to say mm-hmm. anything. If I went on as Lee Banks from The Sun or whatever, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden, you know who I am. You identify what I represent and who I am. Mm-hmm. If everything is about representation and identification, that is the that's why, no Mark's going to go up the wall here, but that's why newspapers are based on absolute honesty.
Well, I think that the journalists actually, by and large, are based on absolute honesty. I mean, I think that if there's any kind of sort of, you know, spin, then I think it tends to be put on sort of, you know, as a result of editorial policies and so forth.
Mm-hmm. But editorial policies are honest as well. Why is it spin? Editorial policies are honest too.
Why has the Mirror never ever said that I can remember that a Conservative government's a good thing?
Well, they have in the past. Basically what you have, you have your Tory newspaper, which is The Sun. You're talking about tabloid press.
Voted for Tony Blair.
Yes, they do. That's it. Exactly. That was exactly the point I was going to make. But it is seen as the Tory press. Mm-hmm. The Mirror is seen as the newspaper. I keep getting the word plebite in my head.
Well, you're going to have to wrap it up now, boys and girls, because we're about to shoot away for a few minutes, because coming up next is our reporter Danny Palmer, who recently caught up with an event site organiser called David Sharp, and they're actually running, in a couple of weeks' time, a charity game jam, which you'll find out all about in a second, because they'll explain it far better than I am, and all the proceeds are actually going to go to the Prince's Trust, which is Prince Charles' one. The event will be taking place in Luton. You'll have details on our website as much as many other websites. I'll get my teeth back in. It's Lee's fault. And if you type in Prince's Trust into Google and Game Jam, you will find all the details there. So anyway, let's hand over to Danny Palmer.
That's Trust, not Trust, not T-R-U-S-S. Thank you.
Yes, Prince's Trust. Anyway, let's hand over to Danny Palmer, who's talking to Dave Sharp.
The Station of the Stars. RTI.
At the end of this month, Train to Game, in association with the University of Bedfordshire, is holding its first ever Game Jam, with all the proceeds going to the Prince's Trust. I'm here with Game Jam organiser Dave Sharp, and he's here to tell me a bit about how it works. So Dave, how does a Game Jam work?
So a Game Jam is an opportunity for everybody that has an interest in games development. That's everybody from the hardened professional through to the hobbyist, to kind of come together in the same place, try and produce a fully-fledged, kind of fully working video game. Timescales can vary, but the standard kind of approach to game jamming is to use 48 hours. So 6 o'clock on the Friday through to 6 o'clock on the Sunday, we'll try and get out as many games as we can in that short period. And it's just a fun way of engaging and developing games.
Yeah, what are the different types of skill areas people need to bring to the game jam? Does it matter if someone's not been involved with game development before?
I think it requires a mix. So, you know, as each team kind of forms, we need to make sure that they've got somebody that's, you know, can take care of the coding side of things, somebody that can take care of the art. Games design is a very kind of fluid area, so people with less experience can still get involved with the actual idea generation and kind of designing the levels and things like that. But it does require a balance, so you do need some technical people and some non-technical people. And of course, there's always the ubiquitous testing, which pretty much anybody can do. So, yeah.
Okay, and where and when will the Game Jam take place?
Game Jam is University of Bedfordshire on the Luton campus, and it'll run from Friday the 25th of March through to Sunday the 27th of March. That's 6 p.m. on the Friday through to 6 p.m. on the Sunday.
And if people want to get involved with it, how would they sign up and register?
The best place is to go through the Main Trends Game website and click on the Game Jam logo. That'll take you through to the Game Jam website where you can find out more information, sign up, and generally get involved.
And will attendees need to bring anything with them?
Yeah, there's a bunch of things that people attending Game Jams you know, typically need. Generally quite common for people to bring their own equipment, although it's not a requirement because University of Bedfordshire have kindly allowed us to use some of their lab space. So if you don't want to bring your computer with you, you don't have to. We'll be able to get a computer for you with all the relevant software. You need to sleep, of course, at some point, although some people don't. So you'll need to bring your blanket or quilt or sleeping bag and a pillow. And food and stuff is available on site and around the university campus.
Do you have any tips for people who might be attending their first game jam?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just to be open-minded and just to get involved. You know, maybe not only just with what your team's doing, but get around, see what the other teams are doing. If you've got less experience with games development, if you're not a professional already or you're not involved in the games industry, there's so much to learn. As there are kind of 15, 20 games being developed around you, all with different styles, all with different approaches, all with different kind of methodologies. So if you've got less experience, it's a great learning kind of method to just get around and see what everybody's doing and just offer to generally jump in and help with everybody. So there's a lot to be gained just by, you know, being a little bit more open-minded and just being willing and wanting to get involved.
Thanks, Dave. The Train to Game Game Jam takes place from March the 25th through to March the 27th, and all the proceeds go to the Prince's Trust. For further details, see www.traintogame.com or go to the Prince's Trust website.
This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world, the station of the stars.